even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy and blonde bombshell, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Me and a young Harry Kane to... what's the word? I've ruined the intro again.
It's a good start, mate. It's a good start. Start as we need to go on.
Platinum princes, there you go.
Right, okay. I was going to say your hair was particularly radiant on the video you did about Ryan Fraser. And I love how it manages to boil piss every single time you post it.
Every time. There's a...
It never goes without comment. Which I suggest that is why you have your hair like that.
I mean, in a way. To an extent, definitely. Like, yeah, you know, punk rock.
Just constant trolling. Yeah. I like it. My psychic and best friend Bardi is currently on holiday in France. He is in a particularly beautiful part of France, where he sent a photo of himself with the Alps behind him and it looks stunning. So he's having a lovely time. He does send a message. He says, "Hello Windy, hello Nathan. Although I missed the game, I thoroughly enjoyed the win. Distance from Spurs sometimes brings great clarity, and this clarity has led me to fully believe in Jose. I wish all the listeners well. We'll discuss my beliefs fully when I return. In the meantime, stay safe." When he says my beliefs, it's slightly ominous, isn't it? I mean, I think he means beliefs about Jose Mourinho, but who knows with Bardi?
I would like you to speculate.
Flat Earth theory.
Yeah.
The moon landing was fake. Lizard people.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things.
A strong tie-in with all of those things and Jose Mourinho.
Yeah. And just general, like, trophy noncery. No, I'm joking. Trophies are good. We need to talk about the Newcastle game, but I don't remember a thing about it because we just watched Leicester, and that's, like, filling my head. So, very briefly, a question from Keith Weichel. He said, "Delighted with 3 points. Was it just me, or did I kind of see a big hole between defence and midfield where Newcastle consistently passed and switched the ball with freedom? What did you think, Nathan?"
Yeah, I remember him asking this at the time and noticing it at the time. Again, I can't remember the Newcastle match because it's really all blowing together quite a lot now. But yes, that was a thing at the time, but it didn't matter. Newcastle are the team who have the least amount of the ball ever, and they had so much of the ball, but you know, we got our goal, we sat back, we made them play the football, and we punished them for it.
Yeah,
that's what we do now.
I definitely remember Saint-Maximin playing central, which was odd,
yeah,
because I've never seen him play in the middle before, and he definitely picked up a lot of the ball in between our defensive midfield, and he caused a few problems, but like no huge scares, I guess. I thought Newcastle actually played okay, you know, and I think 3-1 definitely, like, it wasn't a 3-1 game. It was probably a 1-0 or a 2-1 game. I don't think it was a 3-1 game, but we did the job. Seamus Hart says, "We know how we play against possession-based teams, Leicester and Arsenal, and it works. But how should we play against teams that sit back against us?"
Well, this is kind of the question, and this is sort of my criticism of Mourinho over the last 5+ years. The answer is we don't. The answer is we score early and then we turn it into a game where we force them to have the possession against us. And that is what we did against Newcastle. To a lesser extent, that's also what we did against Leicester.
Mm. And have better players, I guess.
That really helps.
Yeah.
But that's true. Like, there's an issue with, like, me as a tactics nerd being like, just, you know, they're just having the better players. But that's also true if you want to play a possession game, if you want to control the ball and outplay your opposition, you also are going to need at least competitively similar level of players and special players who can do special things like controlling midfield or unlocking a packed defence. So
I know what you're saying, but I think it's less of an issue in the possession-based team because you can create structures that allow you to keep the ball. You might not be a threat. I'm thinking back to like peak Swansea, in fact, under Brendan Rodgers, where and Roberto Martinez, where they would knock the ball around absolutely beautifully and play lovely possession football. They wouldn't always be a threat because quite often they didn't have a good striker. Like, they were lucky to have Wilfred Bonny for a while and they were lucky to have Michu for a while. But when they didn't have those people, they looked completely toothless, but they were still able to play good possession football, right?
Yeah, to an extent, yes.
To an extent, yeah. So moving on to a Leicester game. Firstly, Harry Kane is back.
Yeah,
he scored
boy.
Four in his last two games.
But
in
it's
both,
more than that. Yeah.
It's like he ran 10.5 kilometres in both games. He sprinted consistently well in both games. He's going into challenges robustly, bouncing out of them, turning on a sixpence and like playing incredible passes.
Yeah.
He's playing like playmaker style passes in the number 10 position and then bombing it into the box to get on the end of them.
This was always Harry Kane though, wasn't it? That is the archetypal Harry Kane move. He drops deep, sprays the ball wide, and then arrives there for the return pass. What we'd seen over the last 2 years was him either staying up top and not coming back in the first place, or coming deep and playing the pass but not being able to get in the box in time. It's just been fitness the whole time. It's really just been fitness, and that prolonged break has done him so much good, man. He looks absolutely like he's looked good recently. He looks good against West Ham. He looked good against, help me out, what was the other game recently?
Everton?
Wherever. Well, maybe it was Newcastle as well. And he looked phenomenal today against Leicester. That's what's that 4 out of 6 performances where he's looked really strong, which is not something we'd seen from him from a long time. And he just looks explosive. He's notching up the offside, which I'm as keen to see from him as goals. Like, you know? He's back, baby.
I was really nervous about how many minutes he was getting because I was thinking, you know, we're playing all these games in very quick succession. He's got an injury record, which is very terrifying when you need to fit Harry Kane. But I have to say, I was wrong on that. The quick games has actually done him a favour in terms of getting his sharpness back. I think next season's a different story and we're going to have to manage him very carefully.
Big
particularly
agree.
If we're playing Europa League football as well. But this kind of, in many ways, this period's actually been like perfect. The coronavirus has been perfect for Harry Kane.
Like, worth it.
Yeah, totally worth it. Totally worth it. The match itself was really odd. So we won 3-0. We had the lowest possession we've had in a home game since records began. It was under 30% possession.
Oh yeah, dude.
The XG was like sub 1.0 for us.
Yes, but two notes on that. One of the which is that you don't count Suns because it was an own goal,
right,
and you don't count the same thing in the same move, and that would have been a pretty decent chance. I think like 0.2, maybe 0.3. And the other thing is that we scored early multiple times from those tiny chances, so we didn't need to create more in return. Once we'd notched up our lead, we were safe, we were happy. So I don't think that the expected goals in this case it would suggest that like Leicester have outplayed us. I don't think that's the case at all.
And also, although it does appear on Sky now, XG wasn't designed to be for an individual match basis.
No, it wasn't, but I like it, so I use it, even though I shouldn't all the time.
Mourinho post-match said that we were strategically good. Mm. He said that Brendan Rodgers is in trouble with injuries. He's trying to build a team to compensate for other players he's lost. And we knew that in transition, we could win the game. We tried to be very fast at recovering the ball, which essentially that's exactly what we saw on the pitch. We were really good in transition. We were ruthless going forward. Really ruthless, I thought. Kane's finishing, obviously. I mean, the third goal was just... The third goal was insane. I think it is worth noting that Ryan Bennett is a bad defender. He's nowhere near their first choice defender.
Sure.
I suspect he'll go to a championship club this summer. He's not good. But even with Ryan Bennett being bad, that finish is really, really, really difficult from that angle. And he couldn't have hit it any sweeter. It was so perfect.
I mean, that's Harry Kane, though. It's not new that he's finishing like that. It's new that he's getting the chance to. It's incredible to see it again when we've not seen so much of it. But that's just how ridiculous he has been for such a long time, that he would rely on his weak foot, first time, no look, tucked perfectly, you know, millimeter perfect in every direction. That's Harry Kane.
Mm. Oh god, it was that third goal was something else. It was really great. Lucas managed two assists. I think he's been motivated by me saying he's a championship player personally.
Good work, Wendy. Here's what I'm interested in, right? The connection between Lucas performing very well right now and also Harry Kane being able to make his own runs and not needing someone to make his runs for him.
Yes. That's a really good point. It's a really, really good point. Aiden, who is hangy on Twitter, says, has someone flipped the switch on Lucas, starting to get a bit of consistency in his game?
Mm.
And Dan Spurs Staines says, a statement as opposed to a question, resurgence of Lucas. I mean, he was fantastic against Arsenal. Really fantastic against Arsenal with his work and some of his passing. I thought against Newcastle, his performance was slightly overstated. I didn't think it was as good as some people saw. And
sure.
I thought the same today, actually. I thought his pass for the first Kane goal was good. I thought his pass for the second Kane goal was bad and pushed Kane too far out wide. And I thought he did some good defensive work, and he also did some bad defensive work, like not tracking his runner several times.
Well, yeah.
The best Lucas I've seen so far is Lucas on the left against Arsenal. Like,
definitely.
That was phenomenal. Really,
he did
really
play
good.
An incredible three ball for Sissoko today.
He did. Was that the volleyed one?
It might have been volleyed, but it was delicious. I don't know, it's weird to see that from him. It is interesting that it's like you kind of get like the Lucas who's good defensively but bad in attack, or the Lucas who's good in attack but bad defensively, and rarely the both. I guess Arsenal is the exception. I don't know. Anyway, that's kind of crapping on him when we should be celebrating him, because he has played very well recently.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if he keeps this level of performance up, then I've got no issue with him staying. The point is that he's not done this previously. This is new. And it's like, I get the point that we should always leave the door open for players to improve. And I agree.
Yes.
I think it's really important to believe that coaching can improve players, and formations can improve players, and tactics can improve players. Long term, the idea of Stephen Bergwijn being on the bench and Lucas Moura starting is upsetting for me, because I just think Bergwijn's so much better as an all-round footballer.
I don't disagree. I just think just accept it for now. Just accept it for the time being. Like, if we start next season and Bergwijn is still sitting on the bench and Lucas is still starting games, like that would be frustrating long term. But for now, you just accept that we're finding ways to win games, basically.
Sure. Well, the other thing that's interesting about Lucas is one of our improvements in recent games is our off-ball running.
Yes.
So beyond Kane. And most of Lucas's good points have come, like, how do I phrase this? Not from running in behind, essentially. From receiving the ball in deeper areas. Which I think is quite telling, because Lucas has always, for me, been better at driving forward with the ball and getting it deeper, scrapping for it first, because he's very good at that.
Yeah.
And then driving forward with it. So Son and Kane suddenly working out how to run in behind, like you say, has created space and created options. I think that's notable. Really notable. Duncan Butcher, Juicy Sushi, which I, whenever I see the at, I think that is just fantastic work.
It's good.
He says, how much happier would you be if Spurs played the second half the same way as the first, instead of bunkering and riding the game state?
Yeah, if this had been like a blowout and we'd have really killed Leicester, it would have been something to really celebrate. I guess you just accept that this is what you get from Spurs at the minute, and it wins games. And yeah, I know, I guess maybe you don't get the first half without the second half, if that makes sense. Like, from a matter of fitness, from an approach, from an opposition strategy perspective and all those things, yes, I would have preferred us to, like, you know, really finish teams off in that kind of way, but we will also see games where we have that sort of first half, second half dichotomy. But like, when we sit deep, yes, we can see possession in the second half, but we're also just lethal on the counter, and that's how we get our fourth, fifth, sixth goal, is by, you know, punishing teams through that means.
Yeah, and I guess the return of injured players will help as well, because although, to be fair, like, I don't think our bench is that weak at the moment. I think the bench has more potential than Mourinho implies sometimes. Like, we could bring Sessegnon on, for example.
Yes.
And we'd suddenly have a really good counter-attacking threat who can also defend. But if you imagine Dele's on the bench, that's a really good option to bring on in the second half, and perhaps you create more chances on the counter having done so. I don't know, maybe that's too
much. But also, in both those cases, you're creating the chance for good players to have some match time and be in a positive situation, which I think is more important than improving on a two-goal lead or whatever.
For sure, for sure. And certainly the use of substitutes continues to be a frustration for me.
It does, but like, you know, we're seeing Bergwijn off the bench. We're seeing, you know, subs being made at all. We're seeing more than three being used when more than three are available. So I take it.
Mm. Big White Hart Lane Blue Heart, who is Spurs last minute.
Do you think you might be a Spurs fan?
It does seem that way. He says, it's not pretty, but the results are coming. Could you give us thoughts on what it is that stops us stringing more than four passes together in the final third?
Well, we touched on this. It's, you know, it's a lack of structure, but it's also a lack of commitment forward from various players. And it's an overall game approach, which is that it's burst fire rather than fully automatic. We're going to attack for a little bit, and if that doesn't work out, then we'll wait and we'll do it again later, rather than just keep continuously trying to keep things going. We're sampling attacks and then abandoning them when they don't work out, and that's fine. We know, and we're taking risks, and which you have to do. But that's just the team we are. And again, we are seeing results that way. So I think you, at least for now, have to largely accept that that's the way we play.
Yeah. Yeah, I think lack of numbers forward is the crucial thing for me. Mourinho doesn't like to commit too many bodies forward at any one time. So that means, naturally, your passes have to be more precise, because there are more opponents than there are your own players in that half of the pitch, or that third of the pitch. So it's difficult. It's more difficult to find a teammate if there are lots of opponents surrounding them. And we're kind of quite reliant on moments of individual brilliance, which luckily Kane and Son have been able to provide in the last few games. And those excellent runs into the channels, which we're looking for increasingly, I'm thinking. I'm noticing a lot more long balls into the channels than before the break, for sure. This is an interesting one. Harry James says, opinion on Jedson getting minutes off the bench over Sess. I find his loan signing bizarre, as he's taken minutes from both Sessegnon and Skip. Which, I mean, it's hard to disagree with that.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's the same thing over again. It's function before everything. It's function before attractive football. It's function before player development. It's functioning over the cost of various players. You know, it's function overall.
But is Skip any less functional than Jedson?
If Mourinho believes that's the case, then that's what he believes. I don't rate Jedson especially highly. I do think Sessegnon has a high upside, but he's not there right now. He's not given us, you know, his best version of himself, his fully developed adult senior player version of himself. So Mourinho sees it as something of a risk. I, you know, wouldn't be completely persuaded by that idea, but I accept that that's what Mourinho believes and that that is his approach, basically.
So in this game, I thought Lo Celso was quite quiet.
Sure.
Mittal says, Gio, what's his best position? I think he's more suited to playing off the right, where he can utilise his ability to dribble with the ball. And equally, Life of Ty says, would you put GLC's recent form down to fatigue or lack of a stable position?
I think he's probably looks better for us in the central midfield role rather than in as a number 10 generally. I like him off the right too, but I think his best position is dictated by what we need. So we've seen us switching back and forth between the 4-3-3 and the 4-2-3-1 a lot over the last couple of games, and also a brief sample of the 4-4-2. And the best possible use of Gio is in his versatility. It's in us being able to switch shapes based on the game, based on the opposition, based on the needs. He's not bad. he's not had any bad games. He's had some quieter games. He's had less good games. But he's not, like, let us down or you know, been a weak player in any of those positions. So it's just a matter of, you know, I think he's performed better in central midfield, but he's not a problem as a number 10, not even slightly.
Is it not also the case that it's kind of like what you said earlier about Jedson? We Mourinho currently, for many reasons, values functionality over all else. There's no kind of attempt to possess the ball, dictate tempo, do anything adventurous. And so we're naturally not going to see, like, the complete upside of Lo Celso. He's very good and very tenacious at playing a functional midfield role. He did a really good job of that in like three or four games when he played in a midfield two.
Sure.
But I don't think you get the best from him. Like, he's not going to be playing his best football there. There'll need to be a stylistic change to get the best out of him. And it
sure
might be that when we have a defensive midfielder and can play him as one of a midfield three, ideally with Ndombele, then we might start seeing something different.
Sure. I mean, he can be more expressive and show off his creative side. But you know, a respect to him for being mouldable and coachable and responding to the needs and the instructions of the team.
Mm. Right. We're going to slot in here a short interview that Nathan and I did earlier with Bruno Vidrikas, who had seen a bit of our potential new signing, Kim Min-jae. So thank you, Bruno, for your thoughts. And here is the interview now. Welcome, listeners, to a bonus episode of The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Oi, oi.
And we're joined by Bruno Vidrikas, who has very kindly contacted us and said that he knows a few things about potential signing Kim Min-jae. Bruno, hello, welcome.
Hi, thank you very much, Windy. Just a few things, mate.
Well, any insight you can offer is going to be really useful because, I mean, firstly, it's difficult to get a lot of information about him. The Chinese league is not well covered in the UK. But also, like, it's difficult to get full recording. So we go by watching highlight reels, and you can't always tell a great deal from that. I mean, we've had plenty of players who've looked great in highlight reels. I'm thinking George, Kevin and Kudu. And then you see them play an actual match and they're not quite so impressive. Bruno, first off, do you want to tell us a little bit about why you know about the Chinese Super League?
Yeah, absolutely. So after I finished university, when I was about 21, 22, I moved out to Beijing to work in a translation company. And I kind of really immerse myself in the culture as much as I could, and part of that was watching as much Chinese football as I could. So I used to watch quite a lot of Beijing Guoan, which is where Kim's playing now. And yeah, I think it's given me quite a good insight into that kind of world.
And how does the Chinese Super League kind of stack up compared to what we're used to with the Premier League?
Yeah, so I mean, the obvious kind of thing to get out of the way is obviously the quality is far lower than that in the Premier League. But I think the biggest kind of differentiator is the tempo. It's a very, very slow league. It's a fairly technical league, but it's one where there aren't as many kind of quick patterns of play. And a lot of it's about the build up. And I think that's something that is going to be kind of a big thing for Kim to adapt to if he does make the move over to the Premier League.
Sure. And is it dominated by a couple of teams that tend to do well, or is the quality spread out throughout the league?
No, it's definitely the former. Guangzhou Evergrande, I think, have won, I think, 8 of the last 9 titles. And they've really been dominating for a while. There are a few kind of interesting teams, especially recently popped around. Dalian has recently been taken over by Rafael Benitez, who's also brought along Salman Rondon with him. Marek Hamzik is also there as well, and Carrasco. So they're kind of a team to watch moving forward. But I'd say, yeah, it's definitely up to now kind of been dominated by Guangzhou.
Nathan, what about data-wise? Is it difficult to get data from the Chinese Super League?
It's not impossible, but it is difficult. I think Opta don't cover the Chinese Super League much at all. There is quite a bit in the way of Y-Scout data, although that's harder to use and get an idea of. From what data I am able to put together, Kim is a standout in pretty much every regard, though. So at least there's that.
Interesting. Okay. So I guess we need to ask Bruno what his standout qualities are.
Yeah. So I completely agree with Nathan, just to follow up on that. I think data is very hard to come by, and that's why some aspects that I'm going to kind of say that I think are good traits of Kim, we kind of have to preface with that aspect. It's kind of your instincts rather than statistical backup, which is what I'd ideally like to have for a lot of his traits. But I'd say the kind of the biggest trait, well, the first thing to mention about Kim when you see him is his size. He's an absolute unit. He's probably, I think he's around 6'2", 6'3", but it's his frame that's very striking. He's kind of very broad shoulders. He's extremely powerful, and he reminds me a bit of Davinson Sanchez in the way that he will try to use that in every opportunity possible. He will constantly kind of engage in physical battles with strikers and with wingers when they come inside, and try to use his frame as much as he can. But I do think he has a lot more than just kind of that physicality. The biggest thing I've seen to take away from him in the last year is his kind of ability to step up and challenge forwards very kind of proactively, and aggressively kind of win the ball back for his team, step into midfield and start to launch counterattack. I think that's a very kind of prominent play of his in the past year.
That's definitely something that came across in the highlight reels I've seen of him, like you say, proactively getting to the ball ahead of the centre forward and then doing something, be it stepping into midfield himself or playing a quick pass into midfield. The other thing that stands out, and we mentioned this in the podcast previously, but I think it's worth noting here, the size of his head. He's got a massive head,
yeah,
which probably helps when heading away corners or heading in corners, because he tends to score a few from set pieces, right?
Yeah, he does. And the head, I think, is what's kind of drawn a lot of these Harry Maguire comparisons.
Yeah, definitely.
In the past year or two. And it's very hard to look past that head. but no, yeah, he's fairly good. I don't think he's done that well going forward, attacking corners in the Chinese Super League in the past year. But definitely for Korea, it's been a trait which, you know, can only be a positive thing, as Sun generally takes a fair few corners for South Korea as well. So that could definitely be a feature that we'll see for Spurs.
And then we saw Son get an assist from a set piece against Arsenal, indeed. So hopefully more of that to come. So great to hear about his defensive style. And what's he like on the ball, Bruno?
I think he's very competent on the ball. He's a very good passer. I think the tricky thing is, and it comes back to these comparisons of the leagues, right? We really don't know how good kind of his passing is without a lot of the movement ahead of him. So he will regularly kind of nick a ball off a striker, step into midfield, and you kind of, there's a moment where Beijing Guoan could maybe have a counter-attack or create an opportunity, but the kind of lack of movement ahead of him, it really stifles him.
Mm.
And I think if we saw him step out and he had Winks and Lo Celso, Morin Sissoko, Kane and Son ahead of him kind of moving around, I think we'd see a lot more of his passing ability. But so far, from what I've seen, it looks good. He looks very good, very comfortable on the ball.
That's encouraging. In terms of other players that have come out of the Chinese Super League, have there been many successes?
No. I would say the only kind of one that I can think of that's done well out of the Chinese Super League recently was Paulinho, who didn't do too well for us. No, it's an interesting one. I think generally you don't see too many players go that way from the Chinese Super League to Europe and do well.
It tends to be the reverse, right?
It tends to be the reverse, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Roulet at Espanyol, doing all right.
Who's that, sorry?
Roulet.
Yeah, a couple of Chinese players have, I think, in the past. But yeah, it's not something you see too often.
Maybe that's something that'll become more prominent as the league develops. It seems quite young in terms of its development. And what tends to happen is older European players tend to go, eventually it will attract more fans, more money, and then perhaps the grassroots will start getting some proper investment and we'll see growth in the league itself. But yeah, I mean, it's difficult to know how he would then settle in Europe. I guess having Sonny at Spurs would help, just by virtue of the fact that they both are South Korean, speak Korean, so at least he'll have someone to communicate with. That would definitely help. But difficult to know, sort of, in terms of his play style, whether he'd translate well to the Premier League. And what about a fee, Bruno? Do you have an idea of what kind of fee he might command?
Yeah, so it seems to be, again, I've only kind of taken in what Chinese media I can about this. There aren't too many English reports, but it seems to be around the £12 million mark. He actually only moved to Beijing Guoan 1 year ago for £5 million. So
okay.
It seems like it would be a fairly kind of strong piece of business, particularly in this current climate, to kind of get £12-30 million from straight away. And I think Spurs would probably be quite happy to pay that.
Yeah, I mean, if we're letting Vertonghen go, we probably do. And it looks like Foyth will also leave on loan. So we probably do need another centre-back. So it kind of makes sense. Yeah, so like a good piece of business all round, basically.
Yeah, I think so. The only kind of concern I have from a Spurs fan point of view is if this is the way that we're allocating our very limited budget, then that's a slight worry for me. I think he probably will do quite well at Spurs, but I do think there are other probably areas of the squad that I'd rather see us improve.
Sure, that's fair enough. Bruno, that's really interesting. Thank you very much for your insight. Is there anything that you'd like to plug to our listeners?
No, not really. Just keep listening to The Extra Inch. I think you guys are doing very good work, so keep it up.
Oh, you're very kind. Very kind indeed. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Nathan, since speaking to Bruno, or prior actually to speaking to Bruno, you did some research on Kim as well and had some views. Is there anything you wanted to pick up on?
Well, I agree with basically what Bruno said. I've been watching a bunch of his games. I mean, I'm gonna put together another scouting video on Kim. I think I did one for Hoybier, I did one for Fraser, and people seem to like them. But I mean, the too long did not watch version is he's too good for the Chinese league. He may or may not be good enough to play in the Premier League. There's simply no way of knowing. But I'll give you something more in depth and some more context on that in video form in the near future.
Cool. I thought it'd be interesting to talk about squad building as well. I wrote an article about our squad and in particular the homegrown rule. What's interesting with Spurs is that last summer we seemed to do some sort of homegrown rule preparation by signing Ryan Sessegnon and Jack Clark.
Yeah.
And then both of them have pretty much stood still, which doesn't really help in many ways. Although neither needs to be named in the 25-man squad for next year because they're young, having them as freebies is less kind of helpful if they're not going to be trusted to get minutes. It's interesting because as it stands, we've probably got space for three more non-homegrown players if we don't sell anyone. The suggestion is that we might sell Aurier, for example. It's possible that we'll sell Aurier. We could even sell Gazzaniga, so we could create more space. But as it stands at the moment, it's looking like, yeah, like three more is the max non-homegrown players we could buy. So that makes homegrown signings really quite attractive. And we've spoken before, Nathan, about Ollie Watkins and our admiration of him. We've also spoken about some of the really good championship right-backs, like Jaden Bogle, Nathan Ferguson, Matty Cash, who I know you like very much. Max Aarons has been strongly linked also. I'm not so big on Aarons, but I know lots of people do like him. What do you think? Do you think this is going to be a summer where Spurs do target some English players?
Only that, like, the three players we've been linked to most strongly so far are Højbjerg, Fraser, and Kim, and none of them are homegrown. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we're also looking to pick up maybe afterwards a couple of championship players or whatever, but it looks like we're not too worried about, or I don't really know. It's confusing to me because we're clearly like pushing towards our limits in terms of homegrown.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not necessarily a bad thing if we don't name a 25-man squad. So, for example,
sure,
we could name a 22-man squad and that would be absolutely fine if we have lots of players who are under 21 who we trust to get minutes, like Sessegnon, for example. The problem seems to be that we don't have that many under 21 players who are trusted as it stands, and Mourinho hasn't sort of tested any of them out as such. The only ones that I think we can expect to get minutes next season who are under 21 are Jedson, Tanganga, maybe Sessegnon, maybe White, Serkin and Parrott between them can have a few minutes. But that kind of, if they're getting a few minutes here and there, that's going to stunt their progression in the same way that we've seen other players have their progression stunted previously. So, I mean, I was really excited to hear this week when Oliver Skip signed a new contract that Mourinho is probably going to look into loaning him out next year. I thought that was a really encouraging statement. Would you be more in favour of sending most of these young players on loan if they're not going to be used?
I think it's case by case. Like, I wouldn't want to see Sessegnon go out on loan. Skip is a maybe, but I think Serkin, White, Rolls, Clark again, yes. For me, those are all sort of, you plan to loan them first. And then maybe if you've still got a massive issue in the squad towards the end of the summer, then you have to rethink that. But for me, those are in a pre-loan status.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think the Europa League will be interesting. Mourinho's kind of already hinted towards using young players in the Europa League. I don't think he'll go that young. Like, when he talks about using young players in the Europa League, I think he's talking about Tanganga and Sessegnon and, like, maybe Foyth, for example.
Right.
Or maybe White or Serkin, probably not both. Maybe Parrott, if we're lucky. But I don't think there'll be, like, five or six young players in at once. And therefore, I feel it would be much better for us to get Parrott out on loan for the first half of the season and get White on loan for half the season too.
Where would you be loaning Parrott to, do you think?
So I would loan Parrott to a championship club.
Okay.
Just because he would play every minute, or certainly the majority of games.
Certainly think so, yeah.
And I think he would do really, really well. And if there are question marks over his professionalism, I think he'd learn very quickly that you can't be Billy Big Bollocks when there are people you're playing with who depend on this to make a living.
Yeah.
I think that's a lesson he would learn very quickly, and I think it would do him well to go to a club like Wickham, for example, where Gareth Ainsworth has just got a fantastic kind of collective mentality with lots of players who are not the best in terms of technical ability, but are one of the best in terms of mental ability, like their mentality, and as human beings they are just decent people who work hard for one another, and there seems to be a really good club spirit there. I think the problem with, like, the idea of Parrott going to Wickham is you're not going to get them paying his wages because they can't afford it, but you have to take a hit there, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that's... I think we should be completely prepared to balance his wages.
Yeah.
In you know, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested. That's one thing about Mourinho that does make me kind of optimistic, that I think he's going to be well, he's already shown he's more prepared to send players on loan, and I think that is a good thing, and I fully support that going into next season as well. I mean, what we've seen previously is something that I refer to as the leapfrog effect, where essentially a player comes through from the academy and they look really, really good. They get promoted to the first team squad, but they don't actually play, and then the next player below them comes through, also goes on loan, does well on loan, and suddenly seen as a better player.
Yeah,
like they weren't necessarily better, but they're now seen as a better player because they've had more opportunity. And you can kind of see that with Walker Peters and the likes of Max Ahrens. I mean, there's no way that at the same age, Ahrens would be considered better than Walker Peters. But because he's had games, he's leapfrogged Walker Peters in everyone's thinking. And that's through no fault of Walker Peters, just the fact that he hasn't played. And now he's getting games. We're seeing rave reviews for Walker Peters by Southampton fans. I realise that people listening to this might still think that he's not good enough for Spurs, but he's a very competent Premier League player, you know, much like Max Ahrens is a competent Premier League player. And there's, you know, Ahrens isn't vastly better than Walker Peters, basically, put it that way. I actually think the opposite. But yeah, this is what happens when players don't get opportunities, and it's really important that if they're not going to play for us, they play for someone. What was interesting today was that we played Leicester, and their player playing at left wing back, Luke Thomas, has now played more minutes in the last week. I think it was Rowden that tweeted that, yep, than Skip has all season at any level, including Premier League 2. That is insane. We cannot let that happen at our club. It's madness. When you've got an asset as valuable as Oliver Skip, whether he's going to be a Spurs first team player or not, he needs to be playing football to maintain value, but also potentially to become a Spurs first teamer. So some of our decision making around young players has been really, really poor. Zach Kiefer on this note says, with Spurs finally targeting a defensive midfielder this summer, it seems like it would be beneficial for Skip to go out on loan to gain some playing time. What sort of level do you envisage is best for him? Could he conceivably go to a club like Southampton as part of a deal for Højbjerg, or would he be more suited for a year in the Championship? I thought that was really interesting. Mm. So we've been talking about Walker Peters being a make weight in a deal for Højbjerg. Could Skip be a make weight too on loan?
Possibly. I think that Southampton will feel pretty unsure of him. They'll recognise that he's a prospect, but with so little senior game time to look over, it's a difficult decision for them. I think the Skip thing is interesting. Essentially, if you assume that we're going to sign Højbjerg, then we have to choose who we're going to have as the second choice defence midfielder next season, whether that is Winks, or whether that is Skip. Now, that could be that we say we're going to sell Winks. We're going to see what kind of profit we can turn on Winks, make Skip second choice, give him 200 to 500 minutes next season, the second choice behind Højbjerg. We're probably not going to go that route, which means that, yes, if we don't go that route, if we don't clear room for Skip to be getting minutes, then he needs to go on loan. Or a buyback. I find the culture of buybacks in Spain and the complete lack of culture in buybacks elsewhere really intriguing. I would sell him to Southampton if they're interested, with a buyback clause to activate 2 years down the road. But whatever, that's a whole different conversation.
It's interesting because if you own a player, you're much more likely to put faith in them and put your development time into them, aren't you? If it's a loan player, less so. Particularly in a club like Southampton's case. I mean, Southampton have their own really good academy that brings through decent players. For example, they've got Will Smallbone, who's just coming through and looks decent and could probably play one of their midfield roles. So perhaps they don't even need... Perhaps we don't even need to have Skip. But, I mean, in hindsight, maybe the best place for Skip next year would be the Championship, where he plays most games. I don't know. I think he's good enough to play Premier League football, but would he play 38 matches? Possibly not. We want to get him as much game time as possible to make up for this past season. Sticking with the idea of squad building, RJ, who is RJ Can Fly, says, Kane is about to turn 27. What do Spurs and Jose have to do to get the best out of his prime?
What do you think that question means, Wendy?
I think what RJ is referring to is how we manage his minutes effectively. And I think this question becomes particularly interesting if we do qualify for the Europa League. We can't play Kane in both competitions.
I wouldn't want to.
We really can't do that.
Yeah.
So it has to be that we have an alternative. And then you start thinking, is Parrott that alternative? Or do we buy Milik for 20 million, whatever it'll cost to get Milik?
I mean, I would probably buy
Ollie Watkins.
A cheaper, younger, homegrown player like, well, I don't know, Ollie Watkins or whatever. I mean, I would happily commit to Parrott playing every Europa League game that we're qualified for next season. Instead, I suspect the club aren't going to go that way. Otherwise, we would have seen more of him over the last year. I wouldn't rule it out either. But yes, I think, yeah, we, as much as we have a hole in defensive midfield and as much as we have an issue at right back, actually, let me pause there for a second. Huge shout out to Serge Aurier, who's obviously dealing with incredibly difficult circumstances, and he clearly believes the best way for him to process his grief is to play, and he's performing fine, absolutely fine. So big love to Serge Aurier for what he's going through at the moment. That said, we do want to generally improve at right back. Maybe that's making Serge Aurier a second choice. Like, I wouldn't completely rule that out as a way of going. Or we do want to improve at right back. We do need to improve in defensive midfield desperately. But yeah, we've got to take some minutes away from Harry Kane in the nicest way possible, because he will just run himself into the ground. Harry Kane does need that rest, clearly, and he is obsessed, and that obsession drives him in the best possible way in terms of his performance and his self-development and all of those things. But it also means he will declare himself fit. He will tell his manager that he's fit when he's not. He will convince himself that he's fit when he's not.
Yeah.
And that means we've got to have a decent... Like, when there's no... When the second choice striker is Lucas Moura up top, and Harry Kane says, why are you going to play Lucas Moura up top ahead of me? It's a lot harder to argue with him than when you have Ollie Watkins or whatever else to say, Kane, you need to take some games off because you will explode your ankles again, and then you'll rush back from injury too early, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, it's again, it's probably third priority, but it is a high priority. We've got to find a way for Kane to sit on the bench sometimes, so that we can preserve his career and get the best performances out of him and get the best seasons out of him.
I do think also that is one other benefit of Mourinho, in that he is a complete authoritarian. And if he tells Harry Kane he needs to have a game off or two games off or three games off, then there won't be an argument. Or there might be an argument and Kane might leave. But, you know, at least he's going to force the issue.
But also, so far, he's played Kane every minute either side of lockdown.
Sure.
This side of lockdown, I agree that that's the right thing, but it was also the case beforehand.
Mm. Yeah, I guess you'd argue a lack of alternatives. Once he's got an alternative in place, then hopefully he will actually press the rotate button.
There you go.
Jace Tucker says, take back the comment about selling Winks. That's aimed at me very much. So I just need to sort of address this again.
Go on.
So I said in a previous podcast that we should consider selling Winks or Sissoko.
You're not wrong.
I stand by that. I mean, of the two, obviously I'd prefer to hang on to Winks because I think he's a better footballer. I think he's more versatile. That's not true. I think he's potentially more midfield versatile. And I also obviously think he's important in terms of the homegrown quota. And he's fully coys. And I just love Harry Winks. I really, really like Harry Winks. I don't have those same feelings about Mucha Sissoko. I think it makes sense to sell him as he's getting older anyway. And I think he, although he does some good things, I think he's a weak spot in the team and in the squad. But I do stand by the fact that if we can't sell Sissoko, we should probably sell Winks.
Sure, and it's a matter of the offers that we get.
Exactly. Like, what we can't have is a huge clutch of fairly samey midfielders taking up vast amounts of wages in our squad. We're not rich enough. Yeah, we're not rich enough to do that. We can't just stockpile players. And Sissoko is a high earner. I think he's on like 90 a week.
Ooh, boy.
I suspect Winks is on maybe 60, 70, something like that. So in response to Jace's question, I mean, the ideal solution to me is we keep Winks, and he's like Winks and Højbjerg are rotation at the base of the midfield next season, and that's good. I'm happy with that. Moving on. Doran, who is Doz23, he says, where the Mourinho haters at? Amar, who is M. Garfi. He says, are we starting to see the personality behind the Jose Spurs team for the first time? Mal Sadikov, who is the Tonka, says, is it possible that Mourinho is actually a winning coach? I hate the counter-attack as the main tactic in general, but it's certainly been effective. And John Bertel said, where is Windy on the Jose swingometer now? But I'll start with you, Nathan. Where are you?
I want to know where you are on the Jose swingometer.
Okay. So here is my statement on my current position with Jose Mourinho. I don't want Jose Mourinho to be our manager. I really, really don't want Jose Mourinho to be our manager. But he is our manager. And he's getting results. And so he will continue to be our manager whilst he continues to get results. And me constantly shitting on Mourinho being our manager is not going to be fun for anyone to listen to, read. It's not going to be good for my health or anyone else's health. So I'm not going to do that. Instead, I am just going to become zen with my feelings about Mourinho and Spurs. I don't think he's a progressive coach for Spurs. I think he is potentially like a toxic influence at the club. I think he'll ruin some relationships between players and the club. I also think he can win us trophies. I think he can win a trophy next season. I think he could win us trophies the season after. And I suspect we've got him for 2 or 3 years. I don't really like the style of football, but I completely appreciate that given the circumstances post project restart, with what he's had to deal with beforehand and the return to fitness of players, like, I completely understand the choices he's made, and I appreciate the fact that he's done well points wise. I don't like watching Spurs at the moment in terms of our play style. I do like watching Harry Kane, and so I will find these things to keep me watching Spurs and enjoying it, but I don't watch the post-match interviews anymore. I occasionally will read the quotes, but I largely try and keep away from them, and I've got Mourinho muted as a word on Twitter.
Wow.
And wow. I don't like engaging with the fact that he's our manager. So there we go.
Yeah, no, my opinion isn't a million miles away from you. This is what we need to get Vardy on the phone. But
yeah, okay. He loves him. He really loves him, genuinely.
Okay, here we go then. One, Jose Mourinho has done a genuinely very good job of arresting the terrible, terrible form. Not just form, but mentality. Just the whole mess that was at Tottenham this season. Two, I think that Jose Mourinho could definitely continue this trajectory positively. If there's investment with the squad, especially, continue with the functionality and make us qualify for the Champions League next season. Three, I would change Jose Mourinho out if there was a good manager available instead who was going to play progressive, attractive football and bring through young players without a shadow of a doubt. 100% I would.
That's it, isn't it? I mean, we're basically pining for what we had under Pochettino. It's really, really hard to go from a manager like Pochettino, who ticks so many boxes of what I want as a Spurs fan, like playing good football, but playing like a structured style of good football, where you can see every week a tangible improvement up to a point. I mean, I appreciate it didn't carry on as long as we'd like. But you can see, like, in his first couple of seasons, you could just see the game plan clicking every game, and it was so good, and we were really expansive and exciting, and Kane and Winks came through, and that was lovely. That's like the youth progression stopped, so there were downsides to Poch as well. But I'm not getting like progressive football vibes from Jose. I'm getting like,
no, of course.
He's going to grind out the results. He's going to grind out the results, and that means he's going to get the results, and he's very good at getting results. And if you love winning, like, Vardy is the most competitive man I know. Genuinely, that's like, he just is. I've played football with Vardy. Vardy has a winning mentality. he's a runner. He loves getting his personal bests. He loves winning. And there'll be lots of other Spurs fans who enjoy that too. And so having a manager like Mourinho who makes sure like a win at all costs approach is taken to games, that's going to be really popular amongst them.
And that's completely valid. If that's
it's completely, completely valid. But it's not the way I appreciate football. No. It's not the way I enjoy my football. I would rather do a little bit worse in the league, but play nicer football. But with the feeling that one day we could get better, you know? That's the thing. I don't think Mourinho can win us the league. I don't think that if Mourinho had had the team that Pochettino had, that he could have won us the league. But who could win us the league with our current financial
structure?
Sure,
that's kind of, yes. It's not impossible. It's just very, very difficult.
And like I've said, there are some upsides to Mourinho. So I'm pleased he's sending young players on loan. I think that will improve their development long term. I think occasionally his authoritarian approach might be helpful, although I'm scared for what it means for Ndombele. And I will really enjoy winning a cup if it happens. I will really, really enjoy winning the cup. Winning the cup will be fantastic. The journey to winning a cup will be like, it'll be like driving to the south of France in a Fiat Punto with a suitcase on your lap all the way there. It will not, and no sweets in the front. You're not getting sweets from your mum. That is what the journey will feel like to me. It'll be uncomfortable and unpleasant, and I'll want to have a break, but I'll really enjoy it once we get there. So there we go. There's where the Mourinho haters are at. Leonardo, who is LennyD1210, he says, all three of you agreed on the last podcast, I think this was two podcasts ago now, that Davies is fine at left back or even good. I disagree with this wholeheartedly. He's a slow, stay-at-home fullback who's not particularly good at defending 1v1 or reading the game and is a poor crosser. What am I missing?
He is slow, but I think he's decent at defending 1v1s despite his lack of pace, and I think he reads the game pretty well, and I think his creative passing is quietly very impressive. I don't really know how to persuade you if you feel the exact opposite on several of those issues. I, of course, there are limitations with Davies, especially athletically, but I don't know. He wouldn't be starting so many games under both Pochettino and Mourinho if he was terrible. He's fine, man, honest.
He really suits what Mourinho is doing at the moment. He really suits it because he is a stay-at-home fullback, and that's what Mourinho wants.
Yeah,
and so he doesn't have to coach him to stay back because he just naturally does it anyway. But also, like you say, he has got quite underrated passing, and that's really helpful when we're kind of knocking balls into the channels and trying to stretch teams on the counter. So he's kind of well suited. I kind of agree more with Leonardo that Davies isn't good. I appreciate his mentality. I appreciate what he's given to Spurs over the last few years. It can't have been easy not being like a cemented first choice, but still giving it all each game. And there's no doubt about that. He's very committed. I am not the biggest Ben Davies fan in the world in terms of his ability and what he offers. And I would much rather have... I mean, so what I think about fullbacks is, and I said this on Twitter the other day, fullbacks should be a sword rather than a shield. And I don't see either of our fullbacks as particularly good swords. Certainly Aurier's, the intention is to use Aurier that way, but I don't think he is good enough. And I get upset when I think back to like the attacking threat we had when Rose and Walker were at their very, very best under Pochettino. And like, if you think about the added elements that constantly attacking good fullbacks bring you and the space that creates for your other attacking players, it's a lot. But then Mourinho is not going to use a system that employs that anyway. So it's not the end of the world. Anything to add, Nathan?
Sessegnon's pretty good.
Yeah. How would you rate his season?
Sessegnon's season? Three out of ten, because he scored that goal in the Champions League. That's nice.
I wonder what's going through his head right now.
I don't know. I don't think this is a fruitful speculation to be making. Just, just hope for the best.
Yeah, because he's very good.
He really is.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at @DavyShambles and his SoundCloud @DLindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.